It's Wednesday, October 17th, 2007, and you're listening to episode 74 of Fear the Boot, a show about tabletop role-playing games and a little bit more. Running time for this episode is 52 minutes. Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
My name is Adam.
My name is Luke.
And my name is Tex.
And we are going to kick off today's episode with three quick announcements.
Not again.
They'll be linked. We're not going to explain them. They'll be linked. Go to the show notes. Follow the links. First off is Worldwide Wing Night 3.
Woo!
The only thing I'm going to say about that one is it's November 10th, and I believe here in St. Louis we may be renting out or getting a reserved room because... It's my understanding we have a pretty big group of people. So if you can make it,
I think.
If you can make it down to St. Louis to hang with us on that Saturday, please do.
Somebody start the poll. Will Luke be topless or will Luke be wearing a wife beater?
Well, we've already seen Luke's nipples.
That's right.
The second thing is the Eve Guild, which actually is turning out to be about as big as perhaps an even bigger success than our WoW Guild was.
I'm out.
The third thing is the Fear the Boot spoof contest, and you've got an open field. So far, we have no entry.
Anybody who submits right now wins.
So anybody wants to... Yeah, you could send anything and you automatically win pretty much. If nobody enters, I guess things will just go back into the prize closet and we'll come up with a different contest.
I'll just take them.
So anyway, with that out of the way...
Oh, did you hear me? I'm out of the Eve Guild.
Oh, why?
Because my trial's almost up and I bought Team Fortress 2, the Born Fox today, and I realized how much I missed blowing things up instead of just kind of blowing things up.
You're a stupid bitch. Turn your account over and make it normal.
I'm poor, man.
Wait, I'll give you the $15 if this is the issue.
You would give me $15 to play just so I could play Eve with you. That's sweet.
That's how much we love you.
Oh. Now, what I want to know is when you play Eve, do you play with the soundtrack to The Empire Strikes Back playing in the background? No,
that's not a bad idea.
The Eve soundtrack is actually pretty good.
It's very calming.
It's nice. It's like I'm floating.
Actually, I turn all the sound off on WoW when I play WoW and have Eve open in the background. Yeah,
I would kind of like it if every time I launched my ship, I had the Imperial March playing.
But, except for last night, where Adam got blew up.
Well, actually, a bunch of us got blown up, but that's not a good story. So we're not going to tell that one.
Yeah, let's move on.
And now announcements. I made announcements long. Sorry, listeners.
All right, Tex.
Yes.
We need a follow-up on the internet dating. How's that going?
It has gone very well. In fact, I am no longer internet dating.
Oh, you took down your profiles.
Commitment.
Where's the ring?
I've agreed to be the best man.
We're not quite that far along yet.
I didn't say anything about a wedding. I just said I agreed to be the best man.
Oh, okay.
So have you taken her down to Xbox Live and showed her your inputs and your ports?
Actually, no. She hasn't been by the office. But she did send me like a little knickknack for my office, and I gave her a Bandai Namco Pac-Man ghost for her office.
Ooh.
Oh, is this another softie?
Hello?
Yes.
Can you hear Adam?
I heard him. I just didn't understand the question.
Another Microsoft employee?
Yes.
Microsoftie?
That's what he meant by softie.
Oh. Isn't that like going up to somebody in the Marines and asking if they were in the Marines and they look at you like you're an idiot because they're in the Corps, not the Marines?
Oh, maybe. I don't know.
Oh, okay.
You Microsoft people have your own culture.
What do you call each other? Do you have like a name for the Microsoft employees?
Yeah, blue.
A blue? What?
Yeah, our badges are blue.
Oh, okay. Oh. So you're blue, but as opposed to contractors, you have like orange or something?
Well,
that's correct.
Let me ask you a question. Is the different divisions of Microsoft, like, are there different cliques that you call each other by different names?
Like when you go down to lunchroom, you don't eat lunch with like those guys from Word or something.
Hey, if Clippy was over there, I'd avoid him at all costs.
All right. Anyway, also while we're still picking on Tex, you have a review for us.
Yes, I do. So actually, I'm sure everybody has a special place in their heart for their first sweetheart, like their first high school girlfriend, the first girl that fell asleep in your arms, your first kiss, the first girl that you held while she cried.
Keep going.
And a lot of times you often wonder what's happened to this over time. And so I had two great loves in high school, and I actually ran into one of my old high school girlfriends recently. Actually, it was at Gen Con.
Wait, girls went to Gen Con?
No, I don't think so.
So anyway, when I was at Gen Con, I actually met one of my old high school girlfriends. And I will tell you, she is looking really, really good. I haven't seen her in a long time.
Tex, you're in a committed relationship. This kind of talk is inappropriate, sir.
No.
Well, I'm not talking about girls. I'm talking about classic BattleTech.
Yeah, we picked up that metaphor a while back.
Oh, okay.
Classic BattleTech has beautiful, beautiful breasts. Gravity-defying. So,
well, as much as we talked about it, the folks at Catalyst Games insisted that we take a look at their re-release of classic BattleTech, and actually, I am fairly impressed with it.
Actually, they kind of did.
Did they?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
Yeah. When I was at Gen Con, I went down to their booth.
Yeah, I know. After I did, and then they gave you free stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. And thanks, Catalyst Games.
Operating manager, operations manager, whatever his title was, basically the guy heads up stuff over there. He started talking to me, and he handed me a box that had some figs in them, and I very rapidly identified all the mechs, and I picked out even some Crescent Hawk paint schemes and some rather obscure BattleTech stuff. And he was impressed and took me back behind their little display and was showing me stuff.
Were you hitting on this guy?
No, I was hitting on his BattleTech. And,
yeah, but afterwards, you guys were all busy going to, like, hentai parties and stuff, so I just took classic BattleTech back to the room for some naughty time.
Uh-huh.
Well, all right, so Tex, give us your review of the revised classic BattleTech. Well, I say revised, the current rendition of classic BattleTech.
Okay, first off, I have to say that the production value of the box set, the books, the maps, the mechs, is higher than I've ever seen before. I confess that I don't really keep up on the current industry, so I don't know if that's standard these days or not, but the artwork, the binding of the books, the quality of the pages, the quality of the art, the models, the quality of the models that came with it was all far higher than I was used to in the past.
You know, something that I liked about it was the fact that the way they've got it set up now, you can play any time period.
Yeah, I really liked that.
Because for those of you that have followed BattleTech, it's gone through multiple eras. You have the 3025 era, the 3050 era. And then pretty much after that, it's just like one cancerous growth. But there were other errors beyond that.
Terrible growth.
But they kind of isolated these rules for if you want to play a 3025 or 3050 campaign, you can kind of cut out that cancerous growth and be back down to a regular pancreas and operate normally.
Well, what had me even more interested, though, is, you know, with our old BattleTech that we played 15 years ago or whatever, there were really two games. There was BattleTech, the tabletop miniatures game, and there was MechWarrior, the role-playing game, that we liberally interwove into one game that we call BattleTech. But the only real, honest hook between the two systems was your character's piloting and gunnery skill. That was it. Right. There's nothing structurally linking the two games beside your piloting and gunnery skills. And I was really impressed with what they're doing now. I was reading one of their campaign books, and they actually had what looked like perks and quirks for the pilots and the mechs to add a little bit more RP element. So your pilot could have a special little ability or a special little perk or a little advantage. But then to simulate the fact that these mechs are old and these mechs are kind of crusty and quirky and they've been passed down from generation to generation, all the mechs had like a little character flaw or something to go with them. And so I thought it was neat that not every mech warrior was exactly the same, and not every mech was exactly the same, and you could even have two mechs of the same model, but potentially have them have different quirks. And I thought it was another way to add some interesting elements, not only to you, but also to your adversaries, because before, you know, if I saw MAD-3R Marauder, I knew exactly what it was. Where with these perks and quirks now, there's a few things that might be surprises for me, because the GM might not tell me what the Marauder's quirk is or what the pilot's perk is, and so I can't exactly anticipate everything down to the number like I used to in the past.
All of my enemies have the quirk of no head armor. I checked on that.
Talking to the guys down there, I'm very impressed with where they're taking the game. The one thing I'm really curious to see is what they intend to do with the role-playing game.
Right, because they have not re-released MechWarrior yet. I understand right. That's one of the things that they're coming out with in the future. I don't know exactly when. And I'm very anxious and very eager to see if they a little bit more tightly interweave the role-playing game with the tabletop game. And that's why the idea of codifying perks and quirks was something that really excited me. And I'd be curious to see if they do more besides just have your piloting and gunnery skill carry over.
Right, because I think they intend to have six core rule books, if I remember what they told me correctly, and one of them is MechWarrior, but so far I think they've only done two of those six core rule books.
There were the big, thick, hardbound rule books. Yeah, I can't remember. It might have been six, it might have been five, I don't remember, but yes, they showed me that too, and I think there's two of them already out, and there's more in the works, and MechWarrior is one of the ones in the work.
Yeah, and I'm very curious to see what they do with the RPG. Because with BattleTech, I liked the RPG. MechWarrior 2nd Edition is what we always played, and I liked it. But I've got to say that it never really seem quite, I don't know, quite complete, quite polished. And I'd be
it's
curious.
Because it was published in like 87.
Well, there were other games published in 87 that seemed pretty, pretty polished. But the point being, though, that I'm curious to see what they do with this new edition.
Well, right. And a lot of what we ended up doing was house rules. So right. We expanded the interconnections between MechWarrior and BattleTech with a lot of house rules, a lot of campaign settings, a lot of campaign rules that we made up on our own.
Right. In fact, actually, we did it to the point that FASA ended up publishing an article on our techniques for doing it. So I don't know if you remember that one, Tex, but that was one of the things we co-wrote way back in the day.
Name droppers.
Yeah. Oh, let's stroke ourselves. We wrote an article.
All right. Well, fine. We'll stop.
I wrote riffs.
Adam, don't get us in trouble. It's triffs, not riffs. Triffs.
All right. Trips. So fine. If you're tired of us talking about ourselves, let's move on to you guys talking about yourselves. Moving
well,
from
I'm
this
awesome.
Is
going
to be a stroke fest like your guys' time over there. Right.
Moving from Gen Con then, you guys wasted this past weekend where?
We killed Nazis.
Okay.
Not really. Go ahead, Luke.
Actually, one group did, but I don't think either of us played in that group.
I didn't play in that group.
I didn't play in that group. Actually, wait. Yeah, I did. I played in the Nazi
group.
Will
you guys just shut up and get to the point?
We played a Festivus Con this weekend.
Okay, thank you.
Woo!
Yeah, you missed out, Dan. It was a lot of fun.
It was a lot of fun.
I have to shout out to Derek, which is DWolf5
yes,
on the forums, five. Because he ran an excellent D&D game.
He was a good player in my game, too. Good times. I wish I could have made the D&D game. Yeah, I want to
lay down some reminiscences.
Some laugh tracks.
Yeah.
Yeah, we after driving through down the actually worst part of St. Louis from the north side to get down to the Bluebird, I'm like, where am I and why are these people on the street corner at 7 a.m. in the morning? But I get down there. The venue is actually really cool. It's the bar and grill on the other side, and around the stage, there were tables set up. The bar was active. Guy I've known for a while, at least acquaintance run the bar, Mike and Sean, of course, was down there who set the thing up. Walk in, my game's already filled up. And that's before anybody from Fear the Boot even showed up.
Yeah, Johnny G and I show up. We're like, all right, Luke, where do we sign up?
Have we said on the podcast what the game was?
I think so. The Heroes of History versus the Temperance League.
Right, yeah. Yeah, like Teddy Roosevelt and Ronald Reagan.
Yeah. I played Teddy Roosevelt. He had like a dire form. I turned into Dire Teddy. I increased in size like 3 times.
All right. Awesome. So let's get down to the stories here because you guys have some pretty quality stories.
Well, I ran that group because I ended up letting in more people. I ended up running a 9-person group of Heroes of History.
It was huge.
It was gigantic. And it was fun. But I tell you what, halfway that my game relied on high energy. And about halfway through, I was dead because I was running 9 people. But fortunately, a lot of other people carried it.
Fortunately, Johnny G busted out a Reagan quote like every 5 minutes.
We had some people who were really into character. The guy playing Lincoln, the big Savage Worlds fan whose name escapes me.
He had a big beard.
What's that?
He had a big beard.
That wasn't the same guy, was it?
Yeah, it was.
Okay, whatever.
Don't fight me on this.
Okay,
just go.
I won't fight you. Yeah, and we had a few good quotes. My name is
Albert Einstein. I just melted a dinosaur.
Einstein did melt a dinosaur. It was pretty hot. Yeah, it was a good time. And I think everybody had a fun time. So I had a good time. But the first game I ran, it wore me out for the rest of the time. So I had to drink heartily.
Yeah,
fortunately, they had both the bar and grill going. So food was available all the time.
I started drinking about noon and didn't stop until like midnight and a half when we left.
What don't you mean when you were kicked out?
Yeah, I mean when we were kicked out.
we'll get to that.
I'm still waiting. Let's come on.
All right, so after I ran
you gamed at a gaming convention. Big shock. Let's get to the funny stuff. Come
all
on.
Right, we gamed. Tony Mass showed up.
Before Tony Mass showed up, a guy who was supposed to run Promethean didn't show up, and so a couple guys were sitting around and like, oh, let's play a pickup game, A World of Darkness. So Luke and I are drinking. We're drunk now, and we're creating these drunken World of Darkness characters. And we're sitting at this table for maybe 20, 25, half an hour. And just this moment where we're all looking around the table and we're like, does anybody ever want to play this? And then we're looking at the GM and we're like, dude, do you want to run this?
Like, you don't look like you want to run this at all. He just gave this look like, okay, let's call it off. Let's play some pool.
Then Tony Mash showed up. So we,
Well, Tony created a new World Darkness character with us.
Yeah, and we never played.
No, we didn't.
But we did some drunken pool.
What did you create? I'm just curious.
I created a fat, middle-aged investigator.
Oh, regular human?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it was FBI type game, X-Files type game.
Okay.
Again, kind of the regular setting for New World of Darkness is Hunter's Hunted, as we keep trying to tell you.
No, actually, I had somebody send me something showing me that they have a book that comes closer. They have I apologize now to the listener because the name of the listener escapes me, even the name of the book escapes me. But
does this email escape you? Did it actually happen?
It did happen. White Wolf has put out a book that basically details stuff like psychic powers and mediums, yes, and hedge magic.
Second Sight. I own that book.
Second Sight. There
and
you go.
And that is, again,
and that's not World of Darkness. It's a separate book.
It's New World of Darkness. I'm talking about the core rule set, which is several books now.
Oh.
New World of Darkness, Second Sight, okay. Urban Legends, so Mysterious Places, Ghost Story. Right.
So it's the core rule book. It's just not the core rule book. But you could take that and probably extrapolate it. Because I asked specifically, does it include things like
how faith? Many books are you using to play Battletech?
Does it include things like faith and such? And the answer was no. But I figure the rules are at least would provide enough starting point to extrapolate what faith rules might be like. So we still, this is not a Hunter's Hunted, but we're getting closer. We're warmer. We're peeing in the same pool, but whatever. We haven't reached the deep end yet.
So I played Apples to Apples for the first time, which is a lot of fun.
This is still a bunch of crap. You played games at Gaming Con.
Adam got yelled at for playing Settlers wrong.
Well, let's get to the fight.
I did that too. Let me apologize in advance to two people if they are listening to the podcast, but
This is going to imply...
No apologies.
All right, well, hold on. I'm going to set up...
Apology.
Because I am the diplomat of the show.
Here we go.
I am going to take care of not apologizing, but let me pretext the story. This story is going to sound like we are insulting a particular group of people that we are not insulting. We are simply relating the story as it happened, okay? So please, if you are in this group, we are not insulting you. We're not putting you down. This is just what happened, okay?
Just the facts.
This is just the facts. So with that in mind, Adam, go.
So my wife arrives with two of her friends, a guy and a girl, and they're dating. And the girl I've known for a very long time, and she and I used to be friends until she started dating this guy.
Right.
Because this guy, take everything you know about that guy, and then he's double that. He's terrible.
If not more for my one run-in with him here.
Right.
Yeah, yeah. So he gets there, and they're having trouble finding the place. So I go out to the street where they're going to be coming in, and I look down, I see him about two blocks down, and I'm like, all right. So I call Melina, and I'm like, all right, just turn around, come back towards me, you'll find it. So as the car is turning around in this four-lane road, someone leaps from the car and then sprints two blocks down to meet me. And I'm like,
okay,
it's that guy.
And for those of you that live in St. Louis, the street he is running across is Olive. For those of you that don't live in St. Louis, this is a busy street.
Yes.
And traffic typically moves at a pretty good clip. So the road he's running across is not like some little back driveway.
Yeah, this was not a good move.
Right, yeah, this is not a smart thing to be running across. So
he gets about half a block down from me, and then he starts screaming, Adam! And we're down in the city, Adam! Hey, Melina says you're gay! What? So he gets closer, and I'm like, dude, I don't even like you. This is not the way to start a conversation. And as an aside, I'm not gay. So then we move on into the bar, and I really wish that this dude had not showed up. So
this just gets better, though.
Yeah, we cruise into the bar, and then the girls separate off and go get drinks, and he goes with them, and that's fine.
The band's playing by now.
Yeah, the band is playing now, and you know what? I like the band.
I bought their album.
I know you did.
Witch Hats. They're fun.
Witch's Hat.
No, Witch Hats, I found out. We were saying really? Wrong all night. Yeah.
Oh. What was wrong
that, it's either that or it's misprinted on my iPod now.
Okay. All right. Anyway, so Luke and I have commandeered a table towards the back, and we're just sitting back there drinking, and I start to prepare him about stories with this guy.
I didn't believe it at all.
It's like, you know, when you're trying to convey an emotion and you're just not doing it justice. I knew this was happening because I could see the disbelief. It wasn't disbelief, but it was, he didn't believe me.
Adam is blowing this way out of proportion. There's no way this guy is that much of a super.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, precisely.
Super jerk.
My first story with this guy is the very first thing that I did hanging out with Adam and that circle of friends was a Lord of the Rings movie marathon. And I ended up having to leave about halfway through the very first movie of the three movie series because he was going back and forth between trying to pick fights with me and trying to pick fights with Carla.
How did you leave?
Oh, and how I ended up leaving. And mind you, I talk a lot on this podcast, but in public, I'm a very quiet person. It's not like I'm going to go in there and offend you. I typically say very little. I'm a very quiet person.
Well, the hair just dissipates the sound, I think.
He's just all getting up in my face trying to start this fight. Then he starts trying to start one with Carla. And mind you, Carla is like trained in boxing and kickboxing. She's not this little like lilting flower of a girl. But so what I ended up doing was sending a text message to Mike and like, Mike, call me. I have to get out of here. Because otherwise, I'm going to end up in a fight with somebody. But anyways, go on. All right, so you and Luke commandeer this table.
So we're sitting back there, and then this guy saunters up. And I don't even know what he was trying to talk about, but he said something about, blah, 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 genetic success. And Luke's like, oh, genetics. you know, as a doctor, I think I can talk about this with you.
And I don't just whip out the I'm a doctor thing. He said some stuff that was completely off the chain. And Adam was trying to tell him, no, that's not how it works. And I'm like, seriously, it doesn't work anything like that. And the guy's like, well, who are you? I'm like, well, I'm a doctor. I do know about these things. And then
he's like, don't call me indoctrinated. There was like this shocked disbelief on Luke's face. Like, this did not just happen.
Again, those who've not met me, I am very loud and boisterous, but I'm friendly and nice. I don't go around picking fights. I'm pretty unassuming. And this guy is up in my face already.
So at this point, Luke evicts himself from the...
Oh, bathroom break. Oh, thanks for that.
Yeah, thanks for bailing on me, jerk.
Hey, he's your friend.
So Luke sends a text message to Mike.
Meet me at the bar, Mike.
So while he's gone, this guy starts talking about whatever, and I'm kind of droning out, and then he's like, so I was in this band, and it was cool, and I was like, yeah, that's great, dude. Trying to listen to the music. And then he's like, yeah, I was this guy in there, and we kind of hooked up and experimented. I'm like, this conversation's getting kind of weird because there's no context for this. And he's like, yeah, the guy said I was pretty good. And I'm like, dude, you're going out with my friend and you're telling me about your gay.
And by the way, he's toning this down. He was very explicit about what
he was good at.
It was in Violet already, but he was very, very clear about the things he was good at. We'll just leave it at that.
Yeah, he was attempting to impress me with his prowess. And I was like, dude, that's cool. You know, you do your own thing, but I got to go to the bathroom and then I got to get another beer because it's that time. And so as I stand up to leave, this arm shoots out and grabs me. And I'm like, oh, what is going on now? And the guy's like, dude, are you calling me a faggot? I'm like, what are you talking about? I have to go to the bathroom. Dude, I'm going to kick your ass. What? Serious? Is this happening?
I am comfortably at the bar by this point.
Yeah, I know. Thanks, jerk. So after about 10 minutes of this dude getting this death grip on my arm, I finally escape. And then I head up to the bar, and then who materializes out of the shadows but Dr. Luke.
Hey, what's happening? How's that friend of yours?
Fast forward to the end of the night, where we're just about to leave, and then this guy picks a fight with some guy on the dance floor.
And I found out afterwards, here's how this went down. They were dancing. Jerk dude looks over at this guy and their eyes meet, and this guy's dancing like, hey man, you call it, like, you call the dance and I'll do it, like, no jitterbug or, you know, jazz hands. And this guy comes up like, what, you want to fight? starts pushing him around, and so then everybody gets in on it, and it's
so Sean is DJing, and I see him looking at this, and then I see him, I don't know, maybe take 30 seconds where he's like, did anybody see me see this? So he just turns away and ignores it.
Sean,
like,
just keeps DJing, man. He's in a group.
Sean, you bastard.
Well, he also knows that with the zombie squad guys there, and yeah, Mike, who is a bouncer, that there's no way the trouble's going to go down.
Yeah, those zombie squad guys don't screw around.
They don't mess around.
There was a group of guys over there, and that dude was going to get himself killed. So we evacuated the bar very quickly, and then we went home.
Well, they did. I stuck around and drank some more and hung out.
You're not going to look this easy.
Ugh.
The drive home.
There was a weeping, sobbing.
So this guy, after trying to start the fight, his girlfriend grabs him and is physically dragging him off the dance floor to try and avoid the fight. Well, he is all but beating his own girlfriend, trying to get away from her so he can go fight this guy who simply asked him, name the dance.
Yeah.
Okay. So
just a fun-loving guy.
The car ride home
starts off with him bemoaning society. Because he has to meet every challenge with aggression. Otherwise, people won't take him seriously.
Yeah, that's why people aren't taking him seriously.
That's why.
He's going to be a heavyweight boxer. And this dude's like skinnier than John is and about as tall as Dan is. Like, what's going on here? So I get a call about halfway home while he's launched into this huge rant about how society sucks and he has to perform for everybody. And it's Dr. Luke, and I answer the phone, and all I hear is, and I'm like, oh, I hate you, Luke, I hate you. And then he's like, dude, are you yelling? And I'm like, no, that's him in the background. And by this at this point, he had moved on to talking about, like, the Jews and the blacks, and I'm like, what are you doing? That has nothing to do with what is going on.
That guy single-handedly offended everybody. Every group you can imagine that night.
He was beating a woman and called. It was just terrible.
Blacks and Jews.
I was like, what is going on? So after I get off the phone with Luke, then he starts crying. It's like, it could not have gotten any more uncomfortable. And we got close to my home, and I'm like, dude, this is close enough. We're good now. We're done.
It's 3 miles. Yeah,
we're good.
So, bottom line,
gaming, Best of Wisconsin was awesome.
Gaming was great, and then the after party with Jerkface was entertaining.
I missed all this because I was at Carla's brother's wedding. I missed absolutely.
Yeah, you did miss.
Yeah, blah blah blah. You cut us off on all the gaming talk. Let's talk about your wedding. But a big thanks out to Sean for putting it together, for organizing it, and Mike and Danielle for working so hard. You guys worked your butts off, and it was a fantastic con, so good job.
And related to this, it does sound like there is going to be a convention coming up. We are shooting for March. I don't have an exact date yet. Here in St. Louis, it's just going to be a small to mid-scale gaming con, not a big deal, probably. And Fear the Boot is going to be one of the sponsors of this. We're not going to be the only one. This is not Fear the Boot Con. It doesn't have a name yet, so I don't know what it's going to be called. But there's a couple groups out here we're going to try and draw together for a local gaming con in March. So if you can make it down to St. Louis to hang with us and shoot some dice with us and whatever, then hey, you know, try and
literally shoot some dice.
Yeah, we're just going to be
you would, I know, but
out there slanging on a street corner shooting dice. And so if you guys want to make it down for that,
mayn't we do a worldwide wing night, perhaps on one of the nights of this?
Oh, we could. Or we could have wings catered or something like
that. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Do it there.
Big thing of barbecue canes.
Because, I mean, we have to have it somewhere. So yeah. Obviously, you have a lot of space.
Might as well get some barbecue plates to cater a whole bunch of wings. Yes, Luke, you're raising your hand so politely.
Well, and also, if you make it down to this non-Fear the Boot Con, which I will say that Dan, a few episodes back, was making fun of us because Adam and I were talking about it, and he said he had Fear the Boot Con planned.
Yeah.
And then let's see, it turns into this. So he was no further along than we were. Long hair does you nothing. Nothing, no advantage.
That's okay. We have a surprise that we can
unveil. Do you know what it does for me?
What?
It makes me money.
Your hair makes you money? Please, I want to hear this.
What's that D.O. doing for you?
It's O.D. D.O.'s are Dr. Osteopathy.
Okay, fine. What's that O.D. doing for you?
It's kind of making me money.
Yeah, exactly.
10 years down the road.
Exactly, exactly. Yeah. This shirt was not bought at Goodwill. Now, please.
I own a practice. I'm poor, okay? It all goes back into the practice.
Well, and Dad beat you. Now, can we please get back on topic?
Okay, well, and as a little surprise for you guys, by the time we run this non-Fear the Boot Con, you will get to play with us in Skies of Glass, at least the Tier 1 rules by then, which are in production. Do not send emails or bug us about when it's coming out, because it will be out when it is done.
The only answer you're going to get is soon. It's going to be a one-word answer, no other text. Soon.
Let me explain a little bit more than this, just to kind of set this up a little bit better. Because people are like, well, wait a minute. You guys ran Skies of Glass Tier 1 at Gen Con.
Did we?
Based on that feedback.
That was a rogue group running.
Based on the feedback we got, and based on the insight of the people that were involved in that, and then also on Luke's take from some of these newfangled games he plays, we have actually consolidated, or are in the process of consolidating that whole thing down to a publishable version of the Tier 1 rules, plus the cookout adventure that Chris ran at Gen Con.
Wrote and ran.
That you will be able to download as a PDF, or we may, and this is a may, even have some print copies to hand out or sell for basically at cost, what it costs for us to print them, at this little non-Fear the Boot Con. So these will be fully packaged, playable rules at the Tier 1 level. Still not Tier 2 or Tier 3, but this will be a playable game. And also, I will keep to my promise. I promised several people that I would run a Danvers game at the next con I'm at.
Con game.
If you come down, I will run a Danvers game for people that come down and sign up for it.
That's going to be weird because,
you know, if they're going to do that, they better start studying now.
That's what I'm saying.
Have, like, their study guide and their homework and their midterms and all that
stuff.
That
game doesn't lend itself to, like, modularized.
And have their term paper ready. And
okay, yeah, there is a lot of studying written for that, so I'm going to have to work on that.
Yeah.
But, all right, we've had, I don't know what this has been. This hasn't been announcements, but this really hasn't been, I don't know what this
is. Banter.
This is banter.
It was entertainment. You know what? The past two episodes were so freaking thick.
Yeah, man, I'm tired of that.
It's been dense.
I don't feel bad about having an episode where we just let our hair down, those of us that have it. And, you know,
my hair's always down.
All right. Those of us that can let our money down.
I'll let your money down.
Those of us who dropped $30 on Eve because they lost a ship.
Because $30 is a rounding error in my bank account.
I heard you talking to Carla about that, and you didn't tell her, yeah, I had to buy these two game cards. $15. Yeah, I just turned in some game cards. I watched this.
Hey, we keep separate finances, so it don't matter. They say number one thing they say couples fight over and divorce over is money. So we do not mix our money at all. So she doesn't care. She spends her money on stupid stuff too. So, and I don't care as long as her bills.
Me and my wife do the same thing.
All right. Anyway, before it's completely turned.
She laughs at you for being poor.
No, you know, she's my sugar mama now.
I would like to think there are three kinds of people that listen to our show. People that tune in for the banner, people that tune in for the advice, and people that tune in for both. The truth is, group number three is like five people. That of everyone else that listens to the show is pretty plainly group number one or two. And I'm sure we've already annoyed the hell out of the people that tune in for the advice. Well, the people that have tuned in for the personality or whatever are probably loving this. So let's go ahead and disappoint them now and actually get into some gaming advice. We said at the end of, I think it was episode 72, that in the next episode, we were going to talk about campaign rules. But then we got sidetracked by this whole organized play thing that apparently, five or six people out there do. And so we had to get this Ryan and Tim guy on there to talk about it. So now that we are on the next episode that we ourselves are fully planning and controlling, let's go ahead and get back to the topic and talk about campaign rules. And to bring you guys back to how this came up, we were talking about our favorite game mechanic. And Adam said that his favorite game mechanic was
the Mercenary's Handbook. The
Mercenary's Handbook for Battletech. And the reason was because of the fact that it contained campaign continuity rules. That if you wanted to run a mercenary corps, here were rules for getting contracts, negotiating the terms of the contracts, going out there, fighting the battle, getting the salvage, getting the paycheck, what it costs to launch and land the ships that dropped off your mechs, buying the repair packages, the scarcity of mechs, and all the kinds of things that figure into what happens from one adventure to the next, basically drawing this continuity that goes a little bit deeper than, okay, my character leveled up. But you know, this continuity of resource, this continuity of flow, this continuity of story between these possibly what could even be perfectly modular settings.
Yes.
And so we wanted to talk a little bit more about campaign rules and what goes into them. And the first thing I would start off with is I think campaign rules are largely lacking.
That I agree.
With most systems, it's going to be one of two things. Either the campaign rules do not exist, or they do exist in an obscure source book.
The Mercenary's Handbook is okay.
Or let me add to that, exist in an obscure source book and are overly and terribly complicated.
Because
inaccessible.
Where I was coming up good with vocab. Obscure from is like if I take D&D, the D&D main three, the Player's Handbook, the DM's Guide, and the Monster's Manual. You do not have anything in there for campaign level stuff, but you can go out and buy, I don't know what is the current version, like Castles and Keeps or whatever.
I can't remember what the one was from WotC, but there were about five or six big ones, Cry Havoc, Fields of Blood.
Yeah.
There were several out.
But it's all these kind of one-off source books. You know, it's not part really of their main canon of rules. It's just, if you want to do this kind of thing, here it is over here.
Once again, if you pick up the rules encyclopedia, they have rules for running mass battles and managing realms. It has everything. It is the one D&D book that has everything you'll ever need.
What was the publication date on that?
I don't know. A long time ago.
Yeah, I know. It's stuff that makes our stuff look new.
It's so old, it's new again.
This is...
It's a retro.
It's retro.
It's like Pac-Man.
Speaking of things that are old that are new again, as a complete sidetrack, I would just like to point out to today's teenagers that I remember the 70s, and of all the decades in the 20th century to emulate, why that one? Okay, I'm done.
It is a good question to which I have no answer. Yeah, if you want to emulate a decade, do like...
Don't.
Yeah. There you go.
Be yourself, man.
Be yourself.
Be bold.
And not in flair.
Drink Sprite.
Or bell bottoms, as they're actually called.
Drink O'Fallon Gold, things like that. Play Battletech. Do the things your parents didn't do.
Fornicate.
They must have fornicated once.
I was a virgin birth.
Oh, immaculate.
Back to how good the rules cyclopedia
is. Back to how good the rules cyclopedia is. I don't think years are like Pac-Man scores. You can't reach the top and have it flip back to zero. So...
Come full circle, that's all I know.
So anyway.
Everything you need.
Well, doesn't this lend itself more to tactical games than it does role-playing games?
Not necessarily. It all depends on how you set it up. For Battletech, you might be keeping track of your mechs and what your company has, but And if you're talking about a fantasy game, you might be keeping track of your country or your business and how it all plays out.
Okay. All right. I wasn't thinking on a domestic scale.
Well, let me ask this then. Is there more to a campaign setting than just keeping track of your inventory and your expenses? Do you need more than an accounting system, I guess, is what I'm asking.
That's what I'm saying.
Well,
with my version of campaign rules, I don't like the accounting. I think there's a different and better way.
All right, well, let's get to that second. But certainly with most of the campaign rules that I am familiar with, and I've seen them for Battletech, I've seen them for D&D, 40K is working on some right now or has just recently released some. And I will say that primarily what Texas Stain is right, what I've seen so far is mostly an accounting system. And typically, what it takes for this to work is you have to have someone within the group that's willing to take on being the quartermaster, because or someone who's willing to take on being the seneschal of the keep or something like that. Because if you don't, it ain't going to get done, and you just have to fudge that part.
Well, see, I thought the whole point is to role play the people who are in charge of that. Like, you're playing the king of the castle. I'm the king of the castle. Look at
well,
me.
They're or, right, but is pulling out Excel part of role playing?
That's what I'm saying is that type of campaign management.
So what are some of the types that you are familiar with?
Well, one of my holy grail quests in gaming has been for a campaign system that just does that, that is abstract enough that I don't have to do accounting, but detailed enough that it covers all the possibilities I want. And
what is this magic juice you're drinking that makes you think that you can get both of those mutually exclusive ideas?
Well, it's apparently the juice from the holy grail, so you can suck it.
Well, let me turn that question a little bit. What other things make a good campaign system besides accounting rules just for your supplies?
You know, one of the things that I think would really enhance campaign rules, and this is something that we are trying to do with Skies of Glass with the minigames, is make them a game unto themselves. The fact that really what you do with the campaign level stuff is typically just record keeping. There's no game to it. That you have a game setting. And maybe you shoot a few dice or make a few skill checks and, okay, here's the amount of trade that came into the kingdom, write it down. Oh, gee, on page 135, I can buy a catapult for this much money, so that we're better defended. But it's really not a game unto itself. It's just accounting.
But again, you can just have, from my perspective, the stuff I like, I'm looking for the one that accounts for more than just what people have and how strong your army is. You know, if I'm running a country, how much do my people love me? How smart are they? How can I do diplomacy with other countries? How do I interact with the world on this level above just I'm a man? Now I'm a group. I'm a castle man.
And you know, now let me ask you this though: if you start going out to that macroscopic level and actually playing a game at a macroscopic level, how much is that going to take away from your actual RP group? Because if you're actually gaming with, say, 5 people, and after the game is over, one person can go sit off by himself and do the accounting and basically just come back and give everybody the numbers next time. But if you're going to go play on a macroscopic level, is that going to possibly detract from your microscopic gaming with your group?
No, I think Tex has a valid point, but you give a response to it.
I don't think you're really catching on that it's not just one person doing this. It's the group. You know, if they're all part of, say, the same kingdom, they're all running something, it's theirs to run, that they all participate. And again, you don't have to have accounting. Again, I'll bring up one of my favorite new game systems, Reign, which is kind of has this holy grail for me. It's not perfect, but it's the best I've seen, where each person, it's the game of lords and leaders. You are your regular role-playing character. You go out and adventure, and then occasionally you zoom out and do whatever you're leading. If you're running a guild, a pirate ship, or a country, you make some rolls for that. And everything that the PCs do affect that. And they have stats and abilities that can affect that company, too.
I think part of what you could do, well, two thoughts on this. One is to possibly dodge the trap that Tex is describing, which I have seen in a lot of campaigns.
Yeah, anything that's accounting.
Well, even then, you can find a way to involve everyone. This person may be the keeper of the stores. This person may be the diplomat. Find some way that you can involve everyone in that macro scale. The other thing, and this kind of ties in a little bit to what Luke was describing, is that role-playing games that are out there and the role-playing games that have been turned out in bulk over the years, and I know there are exceptions to this, but for the most part, are designed to describe playing the role of an individual.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rules are about the operation of an individual, and you have many, many different flavors to pick from for how do you abstract the character model? How do you take injury? How do you interact with the world? How do you tell the story? but it's always about one person or maybe one guy with a couple retainers. They largely, and I know there are exceptions, but in bulk, role-playing games are not designed for you to role-play an empire or for you to role-play. So let me just role-play here, not a count, but to role-play an empire, to role-play a group of people.
You are hitting my nail on the head here, and it feels great. What you're talking about is exactly what I want, role-playing larger groups, whether it be a mercenary guild or a kingdom. And there are some rules out. That's what I've always looked for. But I want the rules that are, again, I don't have to account, but still have the granularity that, you know, it's not just, oh, I roll two dice and now I take over your kingdom.
You know, I honestly wonder if maybe this is a moment where we could take this the reverse direction, and maybe role-playing games need to steal a page from the book of video games, because there are a lot of video games
blasphemy.
Where you create at the macroscopic scale, that you describe the traits of an empire. And I'm not talking, I realize a lot as well in Civ, you know, the computer does all the accounts. That's not what I'm talking about. Like Masters of Orion, when you start the game, you create your race.
Right.
And you describe at the macroscopic scale what the general traits and attitudes are of your galactic empire.
I think that's a little different than, but I think it's, I like it.
Right.
I think there's a few, there's actually a few things out there. One thing I found a little while back, I posted on the forum, is there's, I think it's called Dawn of Ages. It's something some people put together. It's free on the internet. It's a system for, hey, you guys always wanted to play in a world that everybody co-creates, but just doesn't seem like a melting pot and diluted down. It's a little game you play for a few sessions, or even just one, where you spell out the world, the races, the history. So then you have a setting to go in and role play with. It's kind of cool.
But let me hit there on the trade-off between breadth and depth. For example, one of the first video games that I played that did that was one of the Heroes of Might and Magic, where when you went to do map combat, it was more like an RTS, and when you were outrunning your empire, it was more like Civilization. But in order to get the breadth, they sacrificed depth. So the map combat was not as good as most RTSs, and the macro scale was not as good as Civilization. And so what I'm fearing is if you do a game where you play both individuals and individuals that have macroscopic influence, you may sacrifice depth in both areas in order to gain that breadth.
I can tell you that the two games I know of that do that and do it well have both been, one was a big success, or at least one that is still talked about today, and that's Birthright for D&D. You know, it's not my style because it's a very specific style of things you can do, but a lot of people love that, and it's kind of what inspired me. I want Birthright that's not Birthright, pretty much. And then Rain just came out recently, and I mean, it's small press, but from everything I can tell, it's doing pretty well. He has a ransom model for supplements where once people pay $1,000 and you can donate as much as you want, he'll release supplements, and he's already on his fourth one of those. I mean, it's apparently doing okay.
All right, let me pick your brain, Luke. Ideally,
I don't want to go there.
Ideally, the situation that we were trying to create with Battletech using the Mercenaries book as a guide was we were trying to create campaign rules that persisted that we could play against each other, like have a double blind campaign.
Sure.
Like with a big map, and then we had units and stuff, but we didn't know where each other was, and then we got into fights, we would fight and then pull that back out to like a turn-based tactical role-playing game thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a game out there that does that?
Mega Mech.
Yeah, okay. That isn't automated, because quite frankly, everybody I played with, the record keeping was minimal. And so I would lose just because I could add.
This wasn't what it was designed for, but Rain can do that. Everybody can play a kingdom, and you can fight. You can go, I'm sending my armies over there, or I'm sending in spies to destroy his infrastructure or to do what have you. You take actions against other people. And if you can play, I guess you can play that way, kind of diplomacy with it, just as you could anything else. I mean, hell, you could just take the company rules from that and do it if you wanted to. I mean, just like that. That's a possibility.
I realize I'm slightly sidetracking us here, but I wanted to pick up a little bit on the comment about double blinds. Has anyone ever had experience playing a double blind game where it wasn't a huge pain in the ass in terms of the whoever was in charge of doing the administration, or that one half of the people involved in double blind were not constantly bored?
No.
No. Double blind only works in video games.
I have played double blind on the tabletop multiple times, and no, I have never seen a system yet that was not one of both of those things you listed. A big pain in the ass for the game master and a lot of boredom for the guy who wasn't moving.
Correct.
So, no.
If you're talking about players fighting each other. There aren't a lot of games that are designed for that in general. You're not going to find a lot of things that do that, although the systems could be construed to make that
happen.
I'm just
tossing out my wish. If Dan wants a game with capital ship combat, then I get a game where you can have a double-blind campaign setting with Battletech Max.
Why don't you make it?
Catalyst Games, get on that.
Actually,
you know what?
The only time I've seen that work is if the game master does all of the other half of the double blind by himself in his spare time, so that way when the gaming group shows up, the game master has the opposition or the op force or whatever you want to call it already done and prepared, and then the players do their thing. So that eliminates the boredom aspect, but then that means that the game master has a significant workload before the players show up and after they leave.
There is a Savage World Savage Tale that does just that, where you are playing army. You're actually a hero, you're leading armies, and the GM is playing the evil armies, and you move about the map and you fight each other.
See, here's the killer thing. I don't want a GM.
You're one of those.
Yeah, I am one of those. The whole point of having players fight each other is that nobody has to GM.
The only time I've seen that done successfully is when I've done that with wargaming groups where you have campaign rules, but they're extremely simplified. And that way the players have very, very little burden in maintaining the macroscopic world. And largely the results of the games are just fed back into that. So you don't actually make a lot of choices macroscopically. You just drive the results. You drive the macroscopic world with the results of your microscopic play.
This kind of ties with thoughts I've made here together. I think part of the reason that I say role-playing games should take a page from video games here is simply because of the fact that it strikes me that role-playing games have not put the amount of thought into campaign rules that they have the microscopic character level.
You know, there's a reason for that, though, that most people aren't actively wanting to play that. It's only us old timers probably who have played a lot and want something different.
No, I think if you got it working, people would play it.
I think there's a lot of people. I mean, I've talked to many, many, many people who they play games or campaigns that go on for months or years, or even if it's a short run thing, that they still want to be able to run a castle or run a business or command a small fleet of starships or something like that, where, you know, they would want some rules for that. But the thing you've got to watch for is all the landmines we've described. If it becomes too much record keeping, it becomes too detached from the main game, it's too much homework after the game, that, you know, you've got to find some way to innovate here to streamline this down the same way that the microscopic game has been streamlined.
And you are talking of my quest here. This is exactly what I've been looking for.
Dude,
and
we need to hook up.
And this,
well, for the wannabe game designers out there, I do have a few suggestions. And one is to somewhat do what we've already done with war games, which is to allow the macroscopic and microscopic world to drive each other. So choices or results of microscopic combat or adventures would just be automatically fed back into the macro world. So you wouldn't have to make a lot of choices or do a lot of record keeping when you zoomed in or out, because a lot of that would be predetermined based on what you'd already done in the other level. And the other thing is to, although I love crunchy, crunchy rules, without a computer, they're a pain. And so I think when you're zooming back and forth between the scales, you do need to minimize or simplify the record keeping very heavily. Otherwise, it becomes accounting.
Why can't we use a computer? In fact, I want to use a computer for that.
Well,
kind of stuff.
You know, now there's an interesting idea. Has anyone ever, and forgive my ignorance here, because obviously, you know, 15 years ago, Battletech didn't do this. But has anybody released a game, a role-playing game, that has computer supplements either with it or on a website that could ease the burden of record keeping?
This one even I can tell you yes to. Yeah, that's becoming a more and more popular trend to have in the back of an RPG book a CD, or to have a website with tools, or even if the company doesn't make it, the fans of it go out and they make little downloadable programs. There are, in fact, Adam's for years been working on a
I need a team of coders to come help me do that.
Adam's been work. Well, Adam's got a scope creep problem.
Yes,
but
he does.
He's been working for years on a tracking program to basically automate what MechWarrior or BattleTech Mercenaries does, and
which would free up all of the record keeping for the people who can't do the accounting and allow you to concentrate just on the actual battles.
Right,
itself.
And I know people that have done similar things for D&D. You can download programs for tracking your castle or whatever. I guess what I would love to see is a great little system. You could almost kind of go back and forth where you've got your character sheet, and then maybe kind of off on the side, you've got a couple little chits or a couple little cards that represent the trade caravan that you guys are running. And then, you know, it's a game unto itself and somehow the two influence each other without becoming this massive.
Okay. Settlers of Catan. Go. Sorry. I know you've been wanting to talk like
that. Well, the funny thing is, ever since I've been wanting to talk for everything you guys have said, but I want a system that does this, that can zoom out, that micro can affect macro and macro can affect micro, but without much record keeping and abstraction.
Right.
And the quest and everything for the last like 3.5-4 minutes have been said. That is what Rain does, and it does.
Bring me this game.
Yeah, when you come to my house on Saturday, it will be there. You can look at it.
That's why we hired.
I will touch myself.
It is a and it is a separate. I won't say it's a separate game. It uses the same system, but it's separate stats. It's something you do off to the side. I'm not saying it's perfect, but it's good.
That's gonna be my question then. If Rain does all this, why is Rain not your holy grail?
It's probably just because I haven't actually sat down and played it yet.
Oh, look what we're doing Saturday.
I'm going to have a fire.
We can play by the firelight. It'll be romantic.
So Rain may be your holy grail, that whole...
Well, I mean, for the campaign rules, yeah, I might. I've already tried to port them to different things.
So let me get this straight. Rain will do the dishes and park the car and cure cancer, but you haven't actually played it.
I don't have a group right now. I've been so busy, I haven't had time to play it. It only came out...
So like it actually may do none of these things.
It came out a month and a half ago. Give me a little break here. When I read it, I immediately wanted to run it because it's so good. Saturday, I will digest it
and let you know my offhanded, ill-informed comments.
I enjoy it, and I think it'd make a great campaign. And from what I've read from actual plays online, it plays pretty much how I'd imagine. And it's set in a fantasy world, but could easily be used for everything. I don't want to talk it up too much because I haven't played it, but reading the book, you know, when you read a book and you immediately want to play, it just excites you so much. This is one of those books. There's only been a handful.
Don't trust any content you get online. Those people are irresponsible.
Yeah, you never want to download anything from anybody because it's always bad news.
I certainly not from Daniel Perez.
I like name dropping people we know.
We know.
And then bad mouthing them.
Fraser Ronald, who else do we know that puts out PDFs online? Actually, we probably know too many to list, but...
Yeah,
we're going to leave somebody out and they're going to get mad.
Yeah.
Let's just stop there.
Yeah, what's funny is we put out things online, too, so... Anyway.
That was the joke. Thank you for explaining it. I know. It
is a Repiger metaphor explanation night.
No, well, it's got to be, because otherwise somebody's going to be sending us ugly mail.
Can you explain what rubber meets the road means?
Yes, it means thank you guys for tuning in, and we will catch you... Shut up. Next time.
What?
This has been a production of Fear the Boot, copyright 2007, fully owned by its hosts. Our theme song was written and performed by Tim White. Listeners are free to use the show in any non-commercial endeavor, as long as credit is provided to feartheboot.com. You can find previous episodes and other resources at feartheboot.com.